Actually, we finished the. I finished the memoir of Miles Davis, and it's called Miles and Me, and it'll be out next fall or next winter. And what we're trying to do is peg it into the movie. It's going to be called Miles. That's coming out either in the fall or the winter, with Wesley Snipes playing Miles. And so I want to, like, based on my book, on Miles' book, with, you know, with myself writing that book, so it's based on that book. So I want to kind of peg it, you know, for marketing. You know, we have to understand how to maximize stuff, you know, so we don't want it to come out way before, but it's finished. So whenever it's going to come out, we're going to peg it to that, you know, so that we can have a little bread. You know, poets don't get that much, but so you have to figure out how to get bread sometimes. and then I'm going to read a few poems. I'm going to read a few poems from Avalanche, but I'm going to read some poems from also from my new book of poems, which I have to give it to them in the summer. It's going to be called Choruses. Choruses. And so I'll read about 8 poems from that. But first I want to read something from this Miles book. When I came over here last year, I come over in December all the time. And then when I came over last year, I read a part when I first met Miles Davis and how he dissed me, which was kind of hilarious. You know, this is not going to be so hilarious. And I'm not going to read it all. I'm not going to read from the beginning. I'm going to read from the middle on. We know from history that genius can have a dark side, that genius can have a dark side as well as a good and light side. There are stories of Picasso's madness, about him putting cigarettes out on the arms of women. We have heard of the dark sides of Beethoven, Mozart, Artaud, and Charlie Parker, just to mention a few. But sometimes genius has a penchant for the comical in its madness, as in some of the stories about Miles Davis. There were many of them, and oftentimes they were weird and, yes, violent too. But they were also very, very funny when viewed in the light of day, just the opposite of the cool, together image he always wanted to present to the outside world. But Miles Davis could be very witty and very perceptive. I remember eating dinner one evening at his apartment on 59th Street overlooking Central Park. All of a sudden, the doorbell rang, and his valet let in a black man who appeared to be in his late 30s. When Miles turned around and saw the man, he asked him who he was and what he wanted. The man told him he had come to meet with him about working as an assistant to Gordon Meltzer, Miles's road manager. Looking upset, Miles told the man he was supposed to wait down in the lobby and come up with Gordon. The man said he knew that, but that he had arrived early and had just come up since he had the apartment number. Well, Miles told him to go back downstairs and wait for Gordon, which he did. He didn't say it that nice, but he said it in a very convincing way. When Gordon arrived with the man in tow, we had finished dinner and were sitting in the very large front room facing the park. Miles, by now peeved with the man for coming upstairs earlier, immediately told Gordon that the man wasn't going to work. Gordon, who could really handle Miles, responded by saying that what happened on the road was his job, that he was the expert, that he knew this man was good and experienced, and that he needed him. Miles looked at Gordon for a long moment, and then told him to tell the man to go into the kitchen and get everyone some ice cream. Gordon conveyed Miles' request to the man, who started walking across the wide front room to the kitchen. Miles pulled up his sunglasses and peered intently at the man as he walked. When he disappeared into the kitchen, Miles dropped his sunglasses into place, turned to Gordon and declared, "Gordon, he ain't gonna work." Oh, Miles, Gordon remonstrated and a little exasperated, "Come on, why isn't he going to work?" Miles gave a little chuckle. "Cause he walks out of tempo, Gordon." "Can't you see? The motherfucker walks out of tempo. If we hire him, he's gonna drop and break up every goddamn thing." "Come on," Miles Gordon laughed. "You can't be serious." "I am," Miles retorted. "Watch what I tell you. He's gonna break every goddamn thing." Anyway, to make a long story short, the man was hired and went to Europe with the band. 2 weeks later, my phone rang, and it was Miles laughing hysterically into the mouthpiece. "Quincy," he said, "remember that motherfucker that I said walked out of tempo?" "Yeah," I replied, not knowing what was coming, because Miles was always out there. "Well, he dropped and broke up every motherfucking thing. We had to fire the bastard and get somebody else. I told Gordon, but he wouldn't believe me. I guess he will next time, huh? Later." And he hung up. I could hear him chuckling just as the fine line went dead. He was something funny, commanding, and intimidating. Like the time he told Andy Warhol to pick up his cape at a fashion show both had been doing for the Japanese fashion designer Koshin Sato, a very good personal friend of Miles's at the Tunnel Discotheque in downtown Manhattan in 1987. They both had been modeling Koshin's clothes all evening, and now it was time for the finale. I had walked backstage and into the dressing room after the last Miles had come down the aisle. Koshin had told me the finale was coming up, and I wanted to see Miles' final outfit up close. When I arrived, Miles was wearing a magnificent gold lamé outfit with a flowing cape. He was supposed to walk out alone for this number. He was smiling, and so were Andy Warhol and his handlers. I remember Andy saying something like, "Miles, you look so divine." Miles thanked him, and then it was time to go. As he started walking, he realized the cape was dragging on the floor. So he turned around, fixed Andy Warhol with one of those fierce looks, and said, "Andy, goddammit, pick up the motherfucking cape." It was a command. No other way to put it. And Andy, he just smiled and said softly, "Okay, Miles." He walked over and picked up the cape, and they both walked out onto and down the runway as the audience exploded into screams and cheers. I remember Andy's handlers being shocked and appalled to hear their boss talk to in this manner. But Andy, he loved it. He had a big smile on his face as he walked behind Miles holding his cape. He loved Miles and his music, and you could tell that he loved being with him like this. For Andy, as for so many others, Miles Davis was the man. He was the man. That's why he didn't mind carrying his cape that evening. A few weeks later, Andy Warhol was dead, shocking the whole art world. A lot more, but it's about 25 pages, you know, I want to read some of these poems. That book is about 325 pages, and in some places it's funny, and it's also sad and revelatory about Miles. It's kind of an inside story, kind of look at him, and try to look at him as a human being. It's about a young man like myself, who was born in St. Louis and who grew up here, and my cousin Donald and myself used to listen to Miles, and he was a hero of mine. And then how do you go from being a hero to getting to know this guy? You know, you get to know him the first time he diss you. So the book is about moving from hero to knowing, to listen from hero to listening to his music, and then the distance travel up to the point where I knew him, where he dissed me, and then get to know him well, really well, where I would tell him, "Fuck you, Miles. Shut up." You know what I mean? You know, that's a long distance to travel, you know what I mean? And still have respect for the man, you know? Still have great respect for the man, and then tell him, you know, "I hit you in your mouth, you know?" You know? I mean, that's a long distance, you know? That's a long distance. And so the book is about that, traveling from way over there to saying that to him. Because when he died in 1991, we were really, really great friends. And I mean, I love Miles Davis, and I miss him now. I miss him every day. It's funny. You know, I miss Miles Davis every day. A lot of people might not miss him, but I do. I knew that other side of him that a lot of people didn't. They saw that face, you know, that stone face. That stone face. But I knew he could smile and be funny as hell and cook great food and, you know, and also be very generous. Be very generous. And so I loved him for that. You know, there were some things I didn't agree with about him, with him. But with me, he was okay. He was okay. And I kind of miss him. I want to dedicate these poems to my cousin Kayla, who's sitting right here, because this is her birthday today. So I want to dedicate this to her. And I want to read a few poems from Avalanche. Not maybe about four or five, because I don't want to read all those poems. But I have to. That book is still in print. So, and of course, it won't come in print until 1999. So I'll have a chance to read that next year, all those poems from that, and then read from my novel, which I'm basically through with. Almost, I got to do a rewrite. So, you know, I was telling Jan that the other day. I Changed Dreams. This poem is about, I lived in New York and going back to New York, you know, and seeing it for the first time and writing about, I wrote this poem. I changed dreams. I changed dreams at 42nd Street, Times Square, as swirling people wearing technicolor attitudes speed through packed days, carrying speech that machine guns out in rhythms equaling movement of averted stares. Squares even sashay by quick in flip, mimicking motion as slick street hustlers roll their eyes around like marbles searching for hits, lick their chops after clicking on to some slow-witted hicks, dribbling spit down their lips, eating hot dogs paid with $50 bills in broad daylight. Yeah, tell me about it, trick. Escalated sidewalks moving everything along so swiftly everyone thinks it's their own feet carrying their bodies, grooving to a different song than, say, in Gloucester, Mississippi, where time is a turtle moving after a flood has crawled back into the space it came out of in the first place. Hear no beepers here in Gloucester. No portable telephones panicking anywhere. Only the constant slow humming glide of bloated mosquitoes as they slide through air and bank in for fresh blood kills. Wind tongue guiding them into the target, wobbling on their zigzag ride above bearded irises, waving sword-shaped leaves in the breeze, as if preparing to do righteous battle with anyone or something, like people living in the Big Apple, their game faces constantly in face. And they even wear them into bathrooms, so scared to death they are of running into some cold-blooded rat there, staking out their own notion of territorial space. Try keeping their fluctuating dreams up to speed, switching up each and every moment in Midtown Manhattan, manic chameleons everywhere here, changing faces at high noon, say, on 42nd Street and 8th Avenue, claustrophobic, heat-drenching crowds packed in August, locks in on flesh, cold as a triple life sentence served out at Comstock. People here switching up gears, trying to sidestep panic in the middle of slapstick dreams. And in the center of it all, a con man who looks like Swifty Lazar, the late Hollywood agent who tools around inside a white Rolls Royce car, peddling gimmicks for old false tooth legends who look so bizarre in public, devoid of heavy makeup, comic even, outside of their dream machines, illusion, tatted memorabilia. The con man peddles at some tacky bazaar inside a rundown building in a cobweb room where he hawks fading photographs of Zsa Zsa Gabor in her prime before she started breaking down in front of our eyes, wearing all that weird graphic white pancake makeup over her ever fade changing face lips, masking the dreams we wear ourselves inside our switching ballistic imagination, bewitching us here as we move through Times Square, popping with the charge of electrical currents. Energy, I imagine this poem having when I first started writing it, then having to deal with how it slowed down midway through when I hit that part about Gloucester a third of the way down and tried to avoid all those zigzagging mosquitoes, dive bumming in for fresh blood kills, my direction moving all over the place after that, changing up the focus, the rhythm, the way my dipstick lines started composing themselves. At that point in time, they began making it all up as they went along, as if they were different musicians improvising this poem, like the Swifty Lazar lookalike peddling old Hollywood wonders before the fall, before they became toothless legends, before they became Zsa Zsa Gabor. This Sputnik verbal drumstick, a thing to be eaten, after all, promises way more than it could ever deliver, traveling at the speed of complete bullshit, as it were. A Technicolor Times Square attitude without rhyme, riding in on a broomstick, heartsick and caustic, homesick for that good old Big Apple charm. Okay, I want to read a little portion from my poem about this poem is 18 pages long, and I'm not going to read the 18 pages. But in this poem, you know, we all try to, like Carter was saying, you have a political kind of agenda sometimes. And as Michael was saying earlier, you know, we are all Americans here, despite the fact that we don't seem to understand that. We don't seem to understand and understand history. That history, if you look at it, if you look at history, history is as a highway, or look at history, period. History is a series of car wrecks. It's just a series of car wrecks on a highway. And it's like somebody puts up a notice that says, ice, curve, don't go 90 miles an hour around the curve, it's ice. But suckers do that, run off the mountain and think, wonder what happened? How come I'm out in this goddamn air falling? You know, they didn't pay no attention. And so it seems like we don't pay our attention a lot here in this country. We don't pay a lot of attention to the road signs and to everything. And then we're going to find ourselves, if we don't pay attention, just like all other civilizations, and I know all civilizations fall, but we have to pay attention. We have to start paying attention. We have to understand that skinheads are out there, their fools are out there, and people are out there doing stupid stuff all the time. You really imagine that. We have to really know that. I live in the West. And it's happening all the time. Last week, about 2 years ago when I first arrived, well, about 2 years ago, this white guy, it wasn't a black guy he caught this Vietnamese honor student, had graduated from Georgetown, went to UCLA's graduate school in biology, graduate biology and everything, and he was going to medical school, and he was skating on a tennis court, and this guy went up to him and stabbed him 57 times and then cut his throat. Because he didn't like black people, Asians, or Jews. You know, like, that's just wow, you know. He didn't even know the guy. So I think that we have to get to some kind of place where we start to understand what our actions are and take responsibilities. And as Ishmael Reed said, grow past two. You know, he has a book called, you know, The Terrible Twos, you know, where he says Americans don't grow up. We just stay two all the time. I want this, 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 I want, you know. It's stupid, you know, and people don't realize that they're stupid. Like people come up to you and grab your hair, grab my hair. Oh, I just like your hair. You say, take your hand off my fucking hair. You know, if I went up to you and grabbed your hair, you wouldn't like that at a party. You would not dig it. So why do you think? Well, you think I'm an object? You know, you think you can come up and do that to me? No, you can't do that. You can't do that. You know, so the point is that we have to kind of grow up and realize where we are and that people ain't going nowhere. We're not going to go to the moon for a long time if we get there. And then we're going to have to take a long time to build it. So we're going to have to make do here. You know, we're going to have to make do here. We're going to have to make do here. And so that's why I'm an American and a universalist, because I understand the prognostication. I understand what's down there. When you look down the long road, you look down, you see what's going to happen. You know, all you got to do is be a little intelligent, you know, and look at it and figure it out. It's easy to figure out. So this, I'm saying all this to say, this poem, this 18-page poem called Borders in the Mind, Borders, Geographic Borders, and I live in San Diego, La Jolla, which is right on the borders. If you don't live on a border, you don't understand what goes on. You live in the middle of the country, St. Louis, where I'm from, and it's all kind of stuff that going on borders that don't go on here. It's really weird to live there. It's really weird to live in San Diego and hear people say, well, I never go down to Tijuana. And I don't see why I have to go down to Tijuana. You say, sucker, because it's 20 miles away. And it's there. You know, people are there. They're not going nowhere. You know, you got to get to know people. So this poem is trying to reach out for that. And it's a long poem, but I'm going to read the last part, the part 10. It's called Borders, and it's about borders in the mind and borders in the ground, you know, where we make borders, and then we have these borders in the mind. Oh, a black person across the street, you know, or a Chinese person. Oh, stupid, or smart, or whatever, you know. Like I told this guy one time, you know, we the one got lynched. You know, we got lynched. We get thrown in jail all the time. I ought to be afraid of your ass. Why are you afraid of me? You know, y'all lynched us all the time. You know, Amistad just came and threw us on the wall. You know, come on. Let's get real here, you know. I mean, I'm not going to say there ain't no violent black folks. We all know in St. Louis it's violent black folks. It's real violent black folks everywhere. But it's real violent white folks, too. You know what I mean? So let's not play games here, you know. Shit. And so anyway, this poem is about all that. So this is the last part. It's part 10. It's part 10. And this poem tries to get to be a song in a way, after real serious kind of issues, and tries to build itself to a song. In the midst of the saying, the song, in the midst of the song, beauty, climbing up from the voice to resonate in air, wrap itself around a rhythm, carrying music, carrying cadence, carrying whatever the magic is. Mystery in the saying, inside the voice, the power of utterance inside time, seeking time, seeking the hidden fascination of an American image of you in me, inside the feeling of the marvelous, inside the spirit of you and me, inside the blues moment of creation, movement, inside new miracles, hoodooing new songs. We inside the clues wooing daybreak from the slackening grip of midnight with the cock's crow, cock-a-doodle-dooing in the crack of first morning light, inside the cool murmurings of water, seducing the tongue of your face, jumping up sad or bright from the river to meet your eyes when you look down there into ripples, moved by rain or wind, lightning, and you there in the undulating waves like those in a black man's Marcel hairdo, greased back in the pomaded pompadour mad 40s. You there in the wee of revealing lewd secrets out of the moment, seeking whatever it was that got away from you, from me. There come whatever. Time is what it is, whatever the cadence is. Come whatever. Time seeks the pulse inside the rising voice, spreading out inside the imperfect voice, seeking perfection in the continuous uttering inside the magic of secrets, voicing mystery through journey of the poem that never gets written right. This and that, as opposed to this or that. Both sides of the river cradling longing. Both sides of a question posing other questions instead of one. The beauty of fufu, sushi, and fejawada. French cooking and Chinese cuisine, this and that and music fusing sound to song with syllables slip from everywhere. Come, spirit. Come, magic. Come, love. Slip from everywhere. Come, wisdom. Come, blood. Spill from everywhere. Come, light. Come, darkness. Come, floods washing in from everywhere. Bring music played by two hands, pulling rhythm from drums. Two hands gripping oars of boats moving downriver. This and that, fusing two sides of an equation in a question mark. The rising of many, many secrets instead of one. Many faces in the flow of the shape of rainbows. Revelations, revelations everywhere saying, who? Saying what? Saying you and me, cradling the mystery everywhere, inside the slow pool of miracles, inside the rising tide of magic is where poetry comes from. Then and now and again in the future, say who, say you, say us, in the mystery of the flow of syllables, inside the juggernaut of language, American, not English, and nothing personal here, just fact. In the journey of most poems flowing out here that most times never get written right. Now and forever, the mystery in the flow of faces that never get tone right. Now and forever, inside the skin, cloning sadness, rejection that is never ever done right. Inside the machine gun of feeling that kills the spirit and is never ever done right. But the rush of glowing love pulls us, the beating heart extended in a handshake here. Blessed with the kiss of eyes, tender as a newborn baby's sigh is what the tongue is searching for inside the sticky wet furnace of the mouth. Slopping tongue spit is where words come from. Turn over the sweet tongue inside the cave of the mouth. Burning is where language springs from, like lava erupting from a volcano, hot and luminous, powerful and new, transforming as the cross-fertilization of beliefs of priests and rabbis and shaman holy men sitting across from preachers and medicine men and imams and Buddhists in America, the Holy Ghost crisscrossing tongues, this and that in a fusion of you and me and everyone in a flow of flowering of we in this moment where we live in the here and now and forever inside the magic of singing in the flow of the mysterious cadence inside the rowing consonants of the impudent river, clean or dirty water washing smooth ripples across our faces as we raise ourselves up clean inside our own American voices, holy throughout the sound of its utterance inside the midst of the saying. The song inside the song, the beauty climbing up from the tongue to the level of utterance. Voice there in the shaping, wrapping itself around a rhythm. Voice there, fused with connection, raises itself up to cadence and light, carrying the music of geography and place. The voice moving out in ever-widening circles, like a mantra, creating inside its own mystery and magic, a unique generic voice inside a celebration of opposites and contradictions. You and me in the fusion of the utterance. You and me inside the tonguing love. You and me inside this volcanic love transforming inside this sweet moment of hesitation before we go on forever in the magic of forgiveness. You and me. As we, inside this sweet tonguing moment, you and me, as we, embracing forgiveness in the here and now, inside this sweet moment of forgiveness, you and me fused inside the here and the now. Thank you. Okay, let me see now where I'm going to go from here. I want to read a few poems from my new book. And these poems are different. I don't know if you heard about, I live about 9 miles from where those people committed suicide, the 39 people. And, you know, and I was riding down the freeway, and I was riding down the freeway going downtown, and I heard over the radio, 10 people are confirmed dead. At least 10 people are confirmed dead in Rancho Santa Fe. And I went like, what? You know, at least 10? I said, damn, that means more. You know, that's out, you know. Then by the time I got down where I was going, it was 18. And then it was counting, up and counting. And so and finally it was 39. And, you know, if anybody knows anything about literature, I know Carter does, and I mean about farm, and if there are 39 lines, it's a sestina. It's a sestina, it's 39 lines. And you kind of manipulate the way words are in the poem. And so this poem is a sestina. It's a sestina. It's called Sestina for 39 Angels. And it's a sestina, obviously. I said it was. And so this is called a sestina. It's about that incident. Because it might not have been a big incident here, but out there was a traumatic incident. And everybody walked around talking about it like, wow. Because Rancho Santa Fe is absolutely filthy rich. I mean, it's like $20 million homes there, $1 million and up. You know, if you ain't got if you ain't got $10 million, you can't go in there. You know what I mean? So you say, like, what? You know, 39 people dead there? And everybody was walking around talking about their, I didn't say anybody in this poem about it, but I am writing a piece about it. Everybody's talking about their property values are going to fall. Property value is going to fall. That's the first thing they talked about on the radio. Our property value is going to fall. Our property value. I'm talking about, what about the people that's dead, you know? Everybody's talking about, what are we going to do about this? We have to organize. I mean, what? We have to have a media campaign. Have to have a media campaign to you know, to offset this shit. You know what I mean? Like, 39 people dead in our community? What? You know what I mean? So I got another poem about that. But I'll read that next time. The sequel. You know, the sequel. So this one is called Sestina for 39 Angels. Sestina, it's a farm, a French farm. There was no screaming to announce Hale Bopp Comet's second tail. No screaming when those 39 people left their bodies, their containers behind, covered their faces with purple silk shrouds, folded triangles, laid down smiling and fell into the steep sleep Marshall Applewhite had prescribed for them deep inside that death mansion in Rancho Santa Fe. They knew themselves as angels, sleuths at creating websites, cruising internets, space angels flying on wings of ancient dreams upward to Hale Bopp Comet's tail, and the only way to get there through the invisible doorway of death. Launched through skies of their minds, they will their bodies on earth, as people of Jonestown did, to be recycled through sleep. Bodies bored stiff and bloated, looking for peace. Skin purple going black as clothes they wore. Covered 39 faces with purple symbols, the color of Lent and Holy Week. When Jesus rose up to join angels, 39 travelers wore black Nike shoes. Weaved through 39 catacombs of sleep, dreamed themselves up like 39 shooting stars to Hale Bopp Comet's tail of silver ice, where they would transform their bodies. 18 buzz-haired castrated males, 21 females surfing death's internet to pass through Heaven's Gate needle eye and death. Not even a stop over here for these souls to rest, dressed in black and purple quarters for phone calls, $5 bills for whatever urges their bodies needed before flying through space. 39 dreams, they would be truly angels, rendezvousing with the mothership hidden inside Hale Bopp Comet's tail, live with extraterrestrials there in a sleeve of silver ice after sleep cut them loose to flow through steep mystery above as sleep like rocket fuel fell away over stages, left them asphyxiated in death after phenobarbital, applesauce, and vodka. They knew the silver ice tail as a sign they were waiting for to cover themselves with shrouds of purple, leave behind computer screen skies. They flew purely as angels, now towards a higher source than conflicting urges of their bodies. A tangled web of websites conquered and control their bodies, surrendering the improvisation of living. They swam in sleep, drifting slowly as motorless boats on the sea, where homeless angels took 39 pot pies and cheesecakes for their journey. They kissed death hard with dry mouths, 39 people down from 100, pursed lips of purple, open in wonder. They flew up to enter Hale Bopp Comet's tail of silver ice particles, gaseous bodies grinning there like death, skulls flashing inside sleep, inside where I am dreaming now of purple faith flashing bright as new angels inside Hale Bopp Comet's third tale. I want to read, I was in Italy this summer, and I want to read a poem about Italy, and a long poem about Allen Ginsberg, and a last poem. I went to Italy to I was invited to Italy, which was wonderful for me, to write the poem. I had written the poem for Robert Colescott's Venice Biennale show. And he was the American representative at the Venice Biennale. And he was the first African-American painter to be so, to represent this country. And it is the greatest art festival in the world to represent, I mean, it's in the world, it's given every year. So I was honored that they asked me to write that poem. And it's in his catalog, and it was written on the pavilion. And if you go to Minneapolis in January, the show is coming to Minneapolis, and the poem is going to be all up and down the walls there. And so I felt good, you know. So they asked me. Thank you. So they asked me to come over to read the poem. So I went over to read it. I was honored. They paid my way, gave me money, put me in a hotel. What was I supposed to say? You know, no, yeah, I'll go, yeah, you know. So I went over there. So this poem is a result of being over there, and it's called Synchronicity, because I went and stayed instead of 5 days, I stayed about 20-some days. And I was in Bologna and Florence and Milan and Venice. And this poem is called Synchronicity because I was in Bologna with a good friend of mine who's Jeff Biggers, who lives in Arizona, and who took me out there, and William Denby, who's a great African-American novelist, and who lives in Florence in a 38-room villa, you know. I was glad to see that brother, you know, there in a 38-room villa and stayed there. So anyway, we were all together in Bologna walking around, and so some of this thing was, and I'm just trying to explain, Bologna is this great town, and we kind of moved from Bologna, from the heart of the town, out to the countryside. And the poem kind of follows that, like you drop a pebble into the water and everything circles out like that. So it's called Synchronicity for William Denby and Jeff Biggers in Bologna. A sweet day, strolling light here, breaking through the cool shadows. Breeze licked under terracotta porticos. The sky up there in gables streaked blue, where the light plays off burnt sienna walls that laid back softest moss clues in your eyeballs. As new off-color reds and okra language break here, warm as bolognese spaghetti sauce. As sight leaps vertigo hues, whole held aloft and splashed and dashed through eyeballs all soft and warm too. As Caribbean seas lapping green-blue waters are filled with heat of lovers. Your eyeballs, tongue, honey-toned thighs of marvelously shaped women. High-stepping it through moments clear as church bells ringing in town squares of hip Bologna. And we are seduced by the architecture here, older than these words, sluicing through passageways as skirts of prancing young fine things flick up their switching beauty at hemlines, reveal bodies firmer than ripe grapes and juicier than sweet oranges on the vine. Hello. And burst through time quicker than music heard here in
casted at in heels that bind the old to the bold, offered up as proof in footsteps that dance behind you and me as we swivel our heads, catch a glimpse of a blur moving at the speed of sound and beauty. As mystery breaks through here, breaks through these moments like syllables flashing across, breaking down, we know they are too hard to put together here in a sentence. How to describe it all? These glorious bodies, doors jumping out of faces of buildings new and old. What can be said but that they are marvelously sculpted clues racing through the minds of those who live here now, like live here now, or those like me who are passing through, who resemble perhaps this man with sheep's eye of a Bedouin passing me now, who might think Americans cheap and bittersweet as Coca-Cola. And in time, the close Bologna air full of sweet bodies in June will get you too. His prickly black beard dusted with specks the color of cocaine, his face white as the lie George Washington told about cutting down that mythical tree, the day smelling of great food like all days here do, rides a breeze turning quickly on a dime like a pirouette, and it comes back to lick your face coolly as you climb your spirit up the winding green road, looking straight up, leading straight up but crooked to the top of the mountain as a manifold form winds its way through your imagination. Roses and bougainvilleas brighten up the sweet air as two rows of tall cypresses shoot skyward straight as candle flames. Guard the rows like sentries at the medieval palace, at the medieval Castella della Roma, south of Bologna in the Apennine Hills where Dante wrote the 31st canto, north of Vallombrosa where Milton wrote Paradise Lost, above the church, devil's church, where the monk fleeing the devil fell to his death, screaming through pure mountain air, cold as a hawk diving down death on a prey, on a day clear and perfumed as this one, perhaps, as the valley rolls out below, like a rug full of patches of roasted barley and wheat, their tops waving like elongated spike heads of punk rockers in fields in sight of bartizans, and the old way of life rules supreme here outside of Bologna, Vallombrosa, Castella della Romina. And its bartizan turrets, no plastic culture, neon here, but architecture, 800 years old, and people carrying tradition in their moist olive eyes walk in steady gates like goats set out to pasture, and time measured here by the number of breaths you take in, breathe out, afternoons wafting through lyrical as whispering flutes become bassoons when dark, fierce storms roll through, their speech packed tight with cracking lightning bolts, in voices long gone, but rustling still amongst trembling leaves of trees who turn to dark faces during shadow time when owls come out to hoot, who speak to you during ghostly moments after midnight, speak to you too with joy at the first cracked light, oozing daybreak here. This next poem is going to be the next title poem of my book. All these poems are not finished yet. I'm just in a state of repair and disrepair, I call it. But I have to read something. I always try out stuff over here and see what happens with it. Anyway, this is a poem called Choruses. It's the title poem for my my new book, and it's dedicated to Allen Ginsberg because Allen was a good friend of mine, and he was a great poet. And it's in about four or five parts, and I'm not gonna say the parts. Choruses for Allen Ginsberg, 1926 to 1997. Within the fluted flight of daybreak, inside its leaked trembling light of birth, after the cracked shell of night's dome has split open, cut loose a flurry of pitched voices grown from different linguistic sperm, we hear a cacophony of opposing rhythms integrated inside the body of a song. carried as if upon the widespread feathered wings of a bird across the sky of the imagination, as in the circling, beating mantra the heart knows, as breath becoming choruses, becoming soundtracks lifted off a poet's chanting tongue. Syllables become moments within moments, or transformed into song that sings beautiful as any morning glory colors when the sun slants down, cuts through whatever is there with its golden blaze, become beams bright and sharp as voices heard anywhere hands meet, drum heads of skin tightly pull, the rhythms vibrating there in skimming waves, washing in or out at you as if they were imitating foaming sound rolling in from the sea, curling tips of its waves into shape of gree-gree lips that can be cataclysmic as foam surging off lips of madmen moaning or roaring or doing whatever it is that madmen do. In Kathmandu, in the center of Nepal, or on the streets of New York City, where voices fire up pitches fast as old Satchel Paige threw a baseball down the heart of the plate, or snaked it across, or snaked it across inside or outside corners disguised as an aspirin, like sound nicks away edges of language, chips of syllables and meaning until the voice cracks words electric as static, perhaps resembles the sound lightning bolts make when ripping off small pieces of dark space and sky, when thunder cracks its jagged whip across the night's night gloom, across the night's high gloom, there where wolves sing love songs to the moon, where looky-loos crane their necks on freeways trying to spot hell-bop comets streaking ice tail, who listen to songs of Beck over the radio, high-tailing it, lickety-split through this dark out west, burning rubber signatures into asphalt as cars wheel in and out of traffic, screech brakes, shape a kind of music, a new language only the initiate know and imitate as it twists itself around again and again, doubles back in the way rhythm turns in and back on itself like a concrete pretzel that claims its own space as it curls itself into space, lifts off in the shape of interwoven, interlocking freeway rhythms carrying cars and speech above our heads on conveyor belts as motors screaming high speed. Of America in a slew of cars that sped down roads twisted as limbs of people suffering from rheumatoid arthritis, gun racks over their faces, grinning like Cheshire cats who just ate a slew of canary birds, yellow feathers scattered all over that sordid history, and everywhere, blood on whiskers of hyenas, blood frozen in ice-cold stares of serial killers, blood in drawing rooms of politicians practicing blood sports, bullshitting us in Washington, blood on the cheese face of a leering moon after eclipse, blood on grimacing faces bursting from bloated black bodies in Rwanda, blood exploding from that incinerated house in Waco, Texas, blood shooting from the eyes of a child before he pulled the trigger in Paducah, Kentucky, blood in the speeches of ministers pontificating from pulpits, blood all up in the curdling screams sliced clean through by razors, blood smeared all over the blues, choruses of screams heard chilling after explosions in Jerusalem, in the choruses of hand grenades tattooing the nights of Bulgaria, Colombia, in the choruses of machine gun bursts stitching the nights, evenings of Mexico City, Los Angeles that snuffed out the life of notorious B.I.G., Tupac in Las Vegas, choruses of fire meeting choruses of bullets, choruses of hand grenades greeting the imploding language of love. Blood on the syllables of choruses spewing blood on musical notes that sing of these times everywhere and in chorus. And blood on money pulled from ocean bottoms by deep sea divers. Blood up in the voices of poets impregnating stanzas with music. Blood on tongues cut off because they sang beautiful images of love. Blood where the landmines litter the earth with eyeballs, skulls, and severed hands that point accusatory fingers stiff as bones in the mud. And choruses and blood and choruses and blood. Choruses and blood, behold
The time clock's ticking inside blood irritating flesh. Inside the moment when the poet knows language as a wellspring. Inside the moment when truth is understood as a two-headed sword that is duplicitous. In the notion that there is a true beauty in flesh, lyrical with movement. With movement, final as death, time marches on, leaves flesh imprinted with maps of spider web sites that spread across the body's internet as songs peeling across this embezzled air tantalizes us with history of our continued failure. When we sing, we hear and know the music best. Hear it with our hearts, imitating breath, the rhythm of drum beats and cadences true poets hear. The heartbeat of their breath in time signature spread, scored like music across fleet pages scrolling the mind, dreams composed within language. When words become musical notes or cards, language is retraced back where it first burst from. Song as anchored root grew into a melody, a sweet flower smelled in springtime, summer, when birds clear their throats of seeds, open piccolo beats and run tremolos beautiful at Dizzy Gillespie speed. And there is joy in the sweet singing of melodies, beauty in the voice marveling at the sweet curve, blessed curves of a lover's right body, in the way a woman's mind is shaped. Her thighs, breasts, her lips caressing in the way a dress might caress the sensuousness of her body. Pure joy in the rapture of her kiss. Blood boiling over there with sweet heat. Glory in her song. Glory in the choruses of blood singing beneath her flesh. Choruses of heartbeats drumming faster and faster still. Glory in the mind running over from a space rooted in love. When a poet creates from inside a moment of stillness, silence, when metaphor is ejaculated from mystery into language, sluices from the brain as words scaffold onto the pages like archipelagos, strung out in a sea of air, like notes blown complete from a bell of a trumpet, becomes poetry when form connects structure with music, when breath carries poetry with the indelible smell of damp rooms after lovemaking, rumpled sheets stained with semen, history, the claustrophobic odor of cigarettes when jamming their crooked burnout butts into overflowing ashtrays, into rooms drenched with stale smell of whiskey and garbage. All this forms a question mark, a gesture, a hand curved in space and bent at the wrist, a fragrance of mystery evoking the color of pastel, drenched with lilting speech of the Caribbean, hinting of soft seas, the music there filled, fragrant with garlic, peanut oil, saffron, orange gold sunsets laced with magenta, pink streaked with magical coral roofs, purple threaded like veins through blue. The feel of it all is a chorus, is a song lifted from the blood of the sky by a poet who sings another prayer at sunset, practices ancient science of Kabbalah. Kabbalah lore, Kabbalah, Kabbalah lore, Kabbalah, Kabbalah lore. And I heard you passed away today, Allen Ginsberg. Heard it over the radio. Like I heard about Miles passing over the idiot tube. That you went home surrounded by friends in peace. Heard you wrote till you slipped into a coma after you wrote a last poem called Fame and Death. You left us great poems, Alan. Poems that fused blues and Jewish chants, rock and roll and jazz riffs you left behind as gifts. Remind us of a life lived fast and to the fullest in absolute defiance. You were a bridge between the sacred, the transcendental, the underground demon and the Buddhist shaman priest. You were the guru speaking of wars when skulls were used to cradle silver coins flashing under the light of human skin stretched tight into lampshades used to filter heat from glaring light bulbs and the silver flashing there like glittering silver bulging with death. Oh, great bard breathing in and out, spoken blues chants coursing through your lines, gone home to rest beside your mother and father in spirit and Shiva. It was a great love you gave us, Alan, a great love that makes me remember you now with affection and awe. Oh, great son of Whitman, Blake, and Williams, your love of mystery, Jamaica, your love of flesh and magic, blood of poetry coursing through courses of your river veins, love coursing through memory of chicken soup, roasted eggs, love, the smell of challah bread evoking candles burning on the Sabbath on the Lower East Side, where you walked hip-de-dip, a little strut and bounce in the dip of your stride. You walked amongst Jews wearing yarmulkes. And though you moved a little odd down there on Passover, Buddhist that you were, you still moved. Many of them still sit 7 days of Sheba for you. Many will lift their voices in solemn Kaddish prayers. And so I baptize you here with rhythms of black church gospel, with rhythms pulled from some of your favorite voices: Ray Charles, Bessie Smith, Raw Manny, Charlie Barrani, Charlie Parker, and John Coltrane have washed your memory down with holy cadences, cool and hot as water, rinsed in blues and jazz riffs, chanted from voices and baptized in holy rivers of Kabbalah, Kabbalah lore, Kabbalah, Kabbalah lore, and blood and choruses, and blood and choruses, baptized in rivers of blood and choruses, Kabbalah, Kabbalah lore, coursing through poetry that bursts from your river veins, coursing through poetry that bursts from your river veins. Shalom, O great bard, mystic. Shalom. Thank you. And this last poem is a poem that came about walking through a plaza in Italy, and it's called Bells. Just bells. I am hearing bells in the music of poetry, bells inside laughter tickling like silver, bells rinsed in colors, shapes and forms washing wave after sonorous wave. Bells washed through wind chimes, swept through morning's first breaking light. Rolling bells, shivering in damp, cool hip speech, hip language seduces and imitates. Bells coursing through syllables, spitting from lips. Bells tinkling through raindrops, pooling on rooftops, spreading like rosebuds, airborne on wind tongues, drooling down storm drains, riding water through whirlpools, drop by dropping drop. Bells spooling electric through hearts in sacred Himalayan mountains of Tibetan Buddhists. Bells swirling through pooling deep eyes of lovers, trilling inside bright voices raised by small children. Bells seducing through winds that play games with our minds, with the way we hear time slipping through our ears. And there are bells heard in kisses when sucking lips meet, vibrating electric bells, silver bells, breeze-blown bells that tongue through fragrant afternoons of springtime, bells in silver dewdrops shimmying down bright green leaves that land and float like rafts skimming surfaces of glass-blue rivers, bells that dive through sparkling waterfalls like voices or solos rinsed with clear welling sounds that tickle our senses like crystal runs of Bill Evans laying down clues. Bells sluicing through in flight, the way a thief steals through the night's deep music, like a sleuth, the way blues tiptoes over piano keys, dropping bell notes here and there as cards shimmy shangling through the thick night air, rinsed in shimmering electric beauty. Bells that render us spellbound, as when the heart seduces sound by locking up pure rhythm that is light, conjuring bells that speak in voices dazzling, church bells that ring inside seductive, sweet strides of dancing women, as when bells roll through their hips, swaying lyrical, incredible magic. And I heard bells in heat of summer language making sweet flowers rise. Heard bells in the voice of Pavarotti's Norsen Domer. Heard bells clanging and rolling through the
square fronting Westminster Abbey heard bells in the sound of African dew mornings rising, trumpets blaring, heard bells in the silver ice of Hale Bopp's streaking comet tail, heard bells ringing through plazas of freedom everywhere, but not from the cracked flute bells squatting mute in Philadelphia. Heard bells inside all beauty heard or seen anywhere. Bells, bells, splendid, sweet bells. Heard bells in the seduction of great poetry singing. Heard bells ringing through the luminous language of sweet birds. Riffing bells, bells, splendid, sweet bells. Swelling inside the airs. Sweet music.
Thank you. Thank you.